joining me. My name is Dave Barbush. I am the marketing director here at SyncWorks, and we are very interested in GPS vulnerability and GPS security here in the U.S. and the Caribbean. And I have the pleasure of having two of the leading minds on all of this in the U.S. Dana Goward, you are the president of the Resilient Navigation and Timing Foundation. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I have Rob Jodry, who is my coworker and is also the director of technical support here at SyncWorks. Hey, Rob.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Why don't you enlighten us a little bit about the foundation's mission?
Well, we are, as you said, a scientific and educational charity, and we advocate for policies and systems to protect GPS satellites, signals, and users.
What worries you the most at the foundation about our GPS, PNT security and resiliency here in the U.S.?
Well, that's a really good question. I suppose the thing that worries us most is that in the United States, GPS is a single point of failure. And this is not something that we've come up with. This is something that folks at the National Security Council have said. We are so over-dependent on GPS for our critical positioning, navigation, and timing services that if anything was to disrupt them for any significant period of time, then we would be up the creek without a paddle. We would be in a near existential crisis. The timing and location services support so many technologies and so many applications that we depend upon for the fundamentals of daily life that we would be hard put to know what to do. So that concerns us a lot. And in terms of threats, well, there are a lot, of course. GPS signals, as you know, are very vulnerable. The sun is, of course, a concern. It could produce severe solar weather any moment that would either destroy satellites or certainly deny signals for an extended period of time. But you mentioned the Chinese. They are very much of a concern, especially in light of the unforgettable humiliation of 1998 that was directly GPS related.
What was that? I don't know what that was.
Sure. Well, in 1998, I think it was the third Taiwan Strait crisis, and China had mustered troops along their side of the Taiwan Strait because they were angry about Taiwan's push for continued independence and separation. There were naval and amphibious exercises, artillery exercises, and as part of that, they sent three missiles towards an area of the ocean about 20 kilometers off of a major Taiwanese naval base. One of the missiles hit its target and entered the water where they'd planned, but two of them were lost, and they believed that it was because the U.S. Air Force had diddled with the GPS signals they were using for guidance. So they called that the unforgettable humiliation, and that started decades of work for them developing their own satellite navigation system and ensuring that they would not only be independent of any U.S. systems for what they needed, but also that they would be independent of space. And so they have established a terrestrial broadcast and fiber-based PNT system so that if space was not available, they could continue life pretty much as normal. This terrestrial system is fully integrated with their space-based signals, but it provides a whole lot of resilience in terms of PNT for the Chinese. And it's pretty easy to imagine that if they wanted to show their dominance, if they wanted to repay us for the unforgettable humiliation of 1998, they would do that through PNT and exploit our overdependence, our extreme overdependence on GPS.
Rob, you are in a practical side of the timing. What do you think would happen across network operations centers and wherever we have some of our timing equipment if we were to lose a GPS? What would happen? What do you think? I know you'd get a lot of support phone calls, but outside of that,
what's
critical infrastructure supposed to do?
Yep, Dana overstated none of that. I mean, you know, it's true. We have got so many eggs in this GPS bucket. It's an issue. We're looking at, we use the technology EPRTC, which is backing up GPS with cesium clocks to get effectively, we use GPS to sort of calibrate these systems and use the cesium to discipline, if you will, these systems so we can continue to have, you know, packet time and frequency signals to run the network. But I mean, to try to put a dollar amount of revenue of impact if the skies were to go dark with GPS, I mean, it would be mind boggling. We have definitely got to get our arms around this. When I started with the phone company back in 1982, there was the Bell system, and we actually had Loran C in Portland, Maine, and that has been, you know, decommissioned. You know, Dana knows about that many years ago, but Loran C was one of the signals we used to get our stratum 1 traceable signals to time our bits clocks. So I'm very interested in this, you know, this E-Loran. When I heard it's coming back, I know the UK, and maybe Dana, you can speak to that later on, but the UK came very close to deploying it. As I understand it, they rolled it out and then pretty much shut it down as soon as ready to go. So I don't know where it is, and I'm curious to know sort of what the plan is for it.
Right. Well, so the UK rolled out the E-Loran along the east coast of Great Britain, but it was a cooperative effort. That whole Loran chain was a cooperative effort between the UK, Norway, Germany, and France. And I think there may have been a Danish site as well. But the challenge was that at the time, Europe was trying to justify the Galileo system, a very expensive satellite system to compete with or complement, if you want to say, to be their own GPS version, right? And so the politicians in those other countries didn't want to have any terrestrial system that would indicate that, well, they really didn't need to duplicate GPS because they had a second navigation system available. And so they decided to shut down their Loran C. And without the other signals, the UK actually didn't shut theirs down. They only had one transmitter, and they've kept that transmitter online ever since then as a timing signal. As you say, their recent 10-point PNT plan calls for expansion of that one tower into, at least three, and so that they have E-Loran as a terrestrial and sovereign source of PNT. And of course, China has E-Loran, as does South Korea and Saudi Arabia. And Russia has they have Chaika, which is the old version of, you know, Loran C. Not sure whether or not they've transitioned to E-Loran. They don't publish a whole lot of papers about that, whereas the Chinese do. And they're very proud of what they're doing. And they are expanding their Loran system to cover the entire country. So we see a lot from China in the academic papers about that. So I'm not saying that it's becoming a world standard, but certainly, there are a number of nations that have decided that, this is the way to go to complement space with terrestrial broadcast E-Loran.
Rob, you are trying to get our customers and prospects and our critical infrastructure partners to enable a firewall. And what's some of the roadblocks you hear about getting just a firewall up and running?
Yep. So the product is Microchip has they call it a Blue Sky Firewall. It basically is a device that can determine if a signal's been jammed. I mean, that's less of a concern, but most GPS receivers obviously can tell if they've been jammed because they no longer have GPS reception, and then they would respond accordingly, going to holdover. The more sort of insidious issue is, and it's also more complicated as I understand it, is spoofing, where someone can actually simulate the sky so that a device thinks it's tracking live sky GPS and it is not. And frequency, of course, now you could be dragged off frequency, not know it, you wouldn't switch, you wouldn't go to holdover, those kinds of things. And that's what this Blue Sky system does, is it can detect that. And depending on how you configure it, it actually has a synthesizer in it where it actually can continue to send GPS signals southbound to a receiver below it while being disconnected from the spoofed signal coming in. So, but a lot of this is new technology. We at SyncWorks have been talking about these same concerns that Dana has pointed out for some years, but it's getting traction. We hear this, you know, at conferences. This topic is getting some traction. I don't know if that's what you're finding too, Dana, but we've seen that.
Mr. Putin is helping raise the awareness a lot.
But what's it going to take to really put our pedal to the metal on this, Dana?
Right. Well, you know, you asked the question, I guess. I mean, we did have the Denver incident, and then the same year we had an incident in Dallas. Right. The Denver incident, the source was identified and located, but the Dallas incident, they never figured out where it was coming from. So we've had a number of warnings. I mean, you know, there's obviously, if you look around the world, there's all kinds of spoofing and jamming and scary things going on. But, you know, unless it happens here, you know, we don't, we tend to think, well, you know, it's not, doesn't apply to us. Even before the Denver and Dallas instance, we almost lost a commercial passenger aircraft in Sun Valley, Idaho to apparently accidental interference. It was sort of a light jamming that caused the receiver to wander off. So it's some, as you may know, a lot of times when you a vessel or an aircraft approaches a jammer from far away, the first indications will be that it's spoofing because there's just enough interference, and the receiver tries to follow what it thinks is the signal, which is really, of course, just random radio noise. This aircraft was headed straight towards a mountain through a bunch of smoke, and but for the eyes of an action of a sharp-eyed radar controller a couple hundred miles away, it would have been a real tragedy. So it's a really good question. What does it take? I mean, and I don't want to be Dana Downer, but you know, if you look at we really have a hard time getting ahead of the bang in a lot of instances. Look at the number. We had over 140 commercial airliners hijacked before 9/11. And in one instance, the hijacker said, "We're going to fly this sucker into a nuclear power plant if you don't give us our way." Right. But did we do anything about airliner security? Did we harden the cockpit doors before 9/11? No, it took a huge, a horrible event that changed the course of history for us to do something as simple as harden cockpit doors and check who's getting on our airplanes. It's just a failure of imagination. So we are hoping and we are working to improve the imaginations of folks in government. And what is needed is, as I mentioned before, a holistic approach to what is now is an invisible utility that everybody takes for granted. And that utility comes from one very vulnerable and weak source that is a single point of failure. So we're hoping that Mr. Putin's demonstrations of what he can do in the Baltic and in Ukraine, and what we know that the Chinese are capable of, and the things that they want to do and be, and the leverage they want to hold over us, we're hoping that using all of that, we can convince government leaders to develop and implement a comprehensive national resilient PNT architecture that includes sources of alternatives and complementary PNT that are easily and readily adoptable by just about everybody. Because if we don't protect just about everybody, then, you know, we leave weaknesses, and that's not going to be good.
Rob, what do you think commerce is going to need, or are kind of the same thing that like a 9/11?
I'm afraid to say that I've worked in network timing for probably 25 years, and the story has always been the same in that, you know, it runs in the background, it keeps the whole show operational, and focus becomes on it when you don't have it. I mean, that has been the pattern. It takes things, and even after this, to Dana's point, we've had these outages, we've had these situations where I worked for a major carrier for many, many years, and we in the technical support seat that I was in, we'd have to write up these root cause analysis reports, And we would report to the FCC if the outages were big enough in bandwidth or long enough in duration and the time it would take to do. And we would have these major issues. And we did a study to find out, you know, what is the problem here? What's the common thread? Is it fiber cuts? What causes these things? And the two things were power and timing. And you would think that that would be enough for folks to say, I guess, what are we not focused on enough here? What's the issue? And it blows up and it gets the bleeding stopped. And then we move on to the next crisis. And that has been, unfortunately, historically, the approach to it. And I'm with Dana. I hope that, thankfully, the holistic GPS failure has not occurred in this country. European countries feel it because there are countries over there. Mr. Putin's one of them. Deutsche Telekom deployed this EPRTC system because they were being jammed and their system was being messed with. They had to work around, you know, that scenario. We have Canada and Mexico on our borders, and you know, we're sort of an island here, if you will, to a certain extent. So far, so good. But I think that's the reason. Until we get bit big enough, people are saying, well, has it been a problem for me today? I mean, the answer is kind of no. But is that the reason not to prepare for, you know, what could be a catastrophe at a level? I mean, again, not to overstate the stuff, but I mean, think about it. No cell phones, no banking, jobs, computers, information streams, all that stuff.
I'm not going to get DoorDash pizza to my house, you know.
No DoorDash.
I mean, you know, that's terrible.
Can you imagine? That's what we need.
Yeah.
What? I'm inconvenienced?
I know. So, So we have, I mean, so P&T really is a cyber issue, and cyber seems to be kind of the sexy thing these days. And China is the big scary thing. And China and cyber are especially scary, as you had mentioned earlier. So we're trying to communicate it in those terms as much as we can, because it's almost hard to figure out which of the many ways things will go bad to talk about. But those are the issues of the day, and so those are the ones that we're pressing the most recently.
Yeah. So as you know, we just recently had a major 911, both unrelated to the one just this week, but we were, one of our customers had a 911 outage that was a function of their timing in their central office. And it had to do with, there was a GPS receiver that was in trouble. They didn't really have a diverse feed to their timing network, was the issue. But it all comes down to diversity. And to Dana's point, it all goes back to GPS. I mean, back in the day, back in the Bell system days, decades ago, you know, there was a site, it was a Hillsboro, Missouri, I believe. It was an AT&T center, and they had cesium clocks, and it was a hub timing architecture. So all timing radiated out from there. There was actually an outage there. They had an outage, and you can look it up and Google it, in Hillsboro, Missouri, back in the 80s, I think it was. And that's what drove this notion of, we need another game plan. What's the game plan? GPS. And we've never stopped. I mean, we've been doing this for decades now, and it's just sort of ironic that you think because these antennas are all in diverse locations, that's true. If I got a jammer in Denver, I'm not going to impact somebody in Portland, Maine. But the commonality, the single point of failure, is the GPS, and we need to figure it out. And a burning issue.
So the first thing is for the government to protect itself. And then I would argue, if the government is going to protect itself, it's not that much more. It probably isn't anything more. Just as with GPS, allow everybody else to have access to the same kinds of services, right? Or at least some tiered level in terms of critical infrastructure, in terms of pricing. If they don't want to give it to everybody for free, maybe they give something to everybody for free. I don't know, but. But we really do need this government leadership approach. It's not a matter of money, because as I say, the technologies are mature, they can be had for as commercial services. It's a matter of, it's a matter of the 12-step process. First step is to admit you have a problem. Yeah. So we need to admit we have a problem and then start working to fix it. We just need a little bit of leadership focus and go for it. But we just haven't got there yet, not in terms of of a coherent government approach and leadership recognition, unfortunately.
Rob, how about your point of view? What do you think the ultimate solution is, or what would you like to see if you had the power?
You know, overly simplified. I mean, I see this as insurance, right? I mean, insurance against a catastrophic outage. And to Dana's point, I mean, as all this technology exactly is developed, it's out there, and the government like to do a GPS, they could lock down a piece of it for their uses, and then they could make it, you know, accessible to commercial folks. And again, oversimplifying it, I haven't thought a whole lot about this, but where GPS is in the sky, from a diversity standpoint, a land-based would make sense to me. You know, just to say, if something happens in the sky, sunspots, who knows what, you know, then there's your backup. So that's probably oversimplified, but I guess that's how I would look at it.
The Department of Transportation has said what we really need is signals from space, signals by fiber, and signals by terrestrial broadcast. And if you have those three, you can always do more. But if you have those three, it's pretty darn good resilient triad for PSP.
That's a pretty resilient configuration. Yeah. Yep. In fact, that's what we do with the enhanced PRTC configuration. You have GPS connectivity. You've got a node that kicks out PTP and is disciplined by a cesium. You could call it a land-based system. GPS goes away. You're running PTP over fiber. There's the components you just talked about. We're just talking about rather than doing it regionally in, you know, Jacksonville, Florida, we're talking about a system that everyone would have access to. That seems like the solution.
Right.
I agree. Rob, is there any questions you had, or is there anything you want to?
Yeah, just two questions. With GPS, spoofing and jamming, I know jamming is very simple to do. You know, spoofing is a little more complicated. But to the jamming, you know, what about E-Loran as far as, is that simple to do, say 10 times more difficult as far as the transmitter is going to be much more powerful to jam? What's the story on that?
Well, I saw a paper from Stanford one time many years ago and saying, well, it is possible, but it's sufficiently difficult that people wouldn't bother. They'd go try and harm you some other way, right? As you say, you need a low frequency signal, which means a big antenna. You need, in order to overcome a megawatt signal, you need a pretty darn powerful signal just to affect your local area. And, you know, as with any of these systems, you don't fix the problem, you ameliorate it, you mitigate the risk, and hopefully you shift the adversary's attention to something that's a bit of a softer target. So the government has said upon several occasions that, E-Loran is a great complement for GPS. And in fact, in 2008, the government said we're going to build E-Loran to back up GPS. And then in 2015, the Deputy Secretary of Defense wrote to the Congress saying, Defense and Transportation, wrote to Congress saying, yeah, we're going to build an E-Loran timing system, and then we're going to build an E-Loran position navigation timing system, because that's what the government was convinced was the right answer. But as we know, that hasn't happened. I know everyone's shocked that government officials would say something and then nothing happened.
Not follow through.
How could that possibly be? But I think, you know, and I don't want to be the E-Loran advocate. I'm just, in most instances, repeating what other more authoritative and smarter people than I have said. But the Chinese have invested a lot of money and developed it. The Russians have kept it. The South Koreans, living in a very precarious location, right, have changed their Loran A system that used to depend upon cooperating with the Chinese and the Russian systems. They've changed it to an E-Loran system that can cooperate with the Chinese and Russian system, but can also be a standalone system. And if those other systems are not reliable, Saudis are upgrading to E-Loran because they live in a very contentious part of the world. And I understand that other people are either considering or doing that. And of course, as you mentioned, the Brits have it as part of their 10-point plan. So it seems to be something that is a completely different phenomenology, produces a similar service. And so, you know, if you have, you know, something that would affect satellite signals, would very, very unlikely to affect that.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that'd be the point, right? If you're going to have two systems, you do want them, but you want to minimize the commonalities. So that makes sense, yeah? So I would assume that the spoofing of an ELORAN system would be similar to GPS in that a lot more sophisticated. You know, you would need to.
Yes, I would think so. I would also offer that establishing another PNT system, I would advocate, again, terrestrial, gives us a number of, I mean, doing it now, we have a number of advantages, again, based on our GPS experience, realizing that people, this is a valuable service and people want to interfere with it. So we have, you know, cryptological capability, we have security keys now, look at dish television, for example, right? You know, you get satellite signals from space, but you have to pay for them, and they know exactly who you are and how much you're using, and you can have a key. And, you know, so lots of things like that can be done now that weren't even conceived of when we put GPS in the sky. So if there were to be an ELORAN system or some other terrestrial system, I think it could be made very difficult, regardless of the signal structure. And of course, ELORANs is to kind of just the brute force of the signal is difficult to mess with. But even then, you could add more security features in that would make it, again, not the target that people would choose first to go after.